Hi everyone, this is Marsha, and I'm the director and founder of the Brooklyn Caribbean Literary Festival. I'm thrilled and elated to announce the birth and launch of our brand new podcast, CocoaPod. Consider the aromatic CocoaPod and how, after carefully ripening under the Caribbean sun, it generously offers up its rich fruit in due season. CocoaPod by BCLF aims to provide a similar delight. Each episode is a seed, a nugget of an original Caribbean story told in the voice of its writer. Each story, an infinite gift by the offshoot of an ancient griot tradition. As a whole, Caribbean stories are like a mighty tree whose branches extend, offering shade and comfort wherever her children settle. From my team and the legion of Caribbean writers behind us, we bring to you the warmest of welcomes.
My name is Lisa De La Touche, and my story, Summer's End, was shortlisted for the BCLF Elizabeth Nunes Caribbean American Writers Prize. And I am so thankful to the BCLF team for this amazing opportunity to share my work with you. Summer's End. We were in the shadow of my grandmother's wooden house. The sun was almost in the middle of our sky, and the tin roof made little crackling sounds as if retaliating against the heat. I sat on a wooden bench between my grandmother's thighs with my elbows on her knees as she gently tugged the knots from my kinky tresses. She was humming Amazing Grace with a baritone sound that vibrated throughout her body and my soul. I wanted to stay there, enveloped in her warmth. "Nice day for river, Mama," I said. "We do," she answered, "but today is to pack your things." My heart sank, and I felt a lump form in my throat. Going back home meant leaving the river with its crayfish and veal, the roasted breadfruit, rolling in boiled bay leaves and its pungent aroma, the scent of the coconut oil that overpowered the outdoor kitchen. "I know," I managed to say. Her hands moved down my back, finishing the last of the braids, my going-home hairstyle. "Belle Fimwe," she said when she was done, passing her greasy hands on my face. My grandmother handed me the comb and oils, and I took them to the bedroom, carefully placing them on the cloth-covered plastic barrel that served as her dressing table. Stacked in a corner were bags in which she kept her clothes, but she wore the same stained garbs repeatedly. She rarely used shoes, preferring to walk and garden bare feet. I reached for my knapsack and found my doll inside, its brown eyes staring at me, its plastic body fragile in my hands. I couldn't do without it at home, but I hardly touched it out here. My cousins didn't play with dolls. They played with whatever was around them, sticks, bottle covers. Whereas I combed dolls' hair, they plaited the long grass that grew abundantly. I climbed the stairs, they climbed the trees, I showered in a cubicle, they frolicked in the river or danced in the rain. I watched television, they played cricket in the dirt or hide and seek in the woods. I read books, they told each other stories. My grandmother called me. I wiped my eyes and went outside. She was still sitting in the chair, her braids which I had done the day before ruffled. She pulled me into her arms, and I buried my face in her ample breasts. She smelled of sweat and smoke and love. "I want to stay," I cried. She rubbed my back. "You have everything in town, Fimwe. Family, comfort, good education." I nodded, but the tears wouldn't stop, and I held on to her, trying to blend her scent with mine. Later that day, I said goodbye to relatives and friends. The next day, my grandmother woke me long before the sun peeked over the mountain. She lit the buzai and held it as I brushed my teeth outside, shivering with cold. She made coffee in the outdoor kitchen, strong for her, light for me. By the time the land was gray and birds were saying good morning, we were trekking down the mountain, winding through well-tread tracks that were crisscrossed with roots from the bailiff trees. Clad in a sweater and one of my grandmother's large church hats, I carried my knapsack on my back, containing my clothes, smoked meat, spices, and herbs. In my hand, I held my grandmother's plastic shoes. She wore a red dress she'd taken from one of her bags and had covered her hair with a Madras bandana. She carried a crocus bag of provisions on her head, sometimes without holding it. She had used an old skirt to form a ring, which she called a tosh, and crowned herself with it before heaving the bag on her head. I had seen her do that with buckets of water that she carried from the souse, because her house had no indoor plumbing. When we got to the bottom of the mountain, she rinsed her feet in the stream that trickled through the path, and we stepped on stones to the other side. After she put on her shoes, we walked to the intersection where we waited for the truck that would take us to town. Some of the villagers asked me if I had a good time, and I had to fight the urge to cry. Summer was over. "The lorry coming," my grandmother said. Soon after, we heard the rickety sound of Sullivan's Bedford. He was our relative, as were numerous villagers. I liked him, and he often brought me delicious cakes from the bakery. The bed of the truck was long, with wooden side panels and a covering of patchwork plywood. Sullivan and the two men climbed up there, and people lifted items to them, tubs of rum, bunches of green bananas, cane, bags of provisions, and other bulky items. After they secured them with rope, Sullivan hoisted me into the truck's box. There were wooden seats across the bed from panel to panel, which reminded me of church pews. My grandmother and I sat to the closest to the cab, and I could glimpse the road above its sun-bleached roof. Sullivan closed the tailboard. "Tout moun pawe?" he asked. People answered, "Oui." "Yes." And "Anouale." The engine sputtered to life, and my grandmother made the sign of the cross as the truck lurched forward. It rocked us through the mountains, moving slowly over unleveled roads and ridges, rickety, rickety along mountain passes. My grandmother pulled me into her lap, and I eventually faded into slumber. I was dreaming of falling into nothingness, and for a moment it felt surreal, until I was jolted awake by piercing screams and a roaring noise. My voice joined the cacophony, and my heart thundered as my body tumbled and tumbled, piling on flesh, colliding with wood and metal. Crashing sounds reverberated as wood smashed to splinters and the trees snapped apart. My body hurtled through a void, and I felt my bones shatter on impact. Then darkness. I opened my eyes to a cloudless sky, to agony and wreckage, fragments of wood and trees, decimated items, mangled bodies, some groaning, some soundless. Remnants of the truck lay in the ravine like crushed foil. Everything felt dreamlike. I tried to move. It felt like fire was searing my legs. I turned my head slightly and saw red tattered material splayed about a blood-soaked figure with a face so distorted I howled. Blood and soot trickled from my mouth. Voices floated around me, muffled as if through cotton. Stupefied, I heard a few words. Two. Blood. I felt my nerves tearing, and I wailed as rescuers pulled my battered body to free my legs. I woke in casts and bandages, hooked up to machines, with my mother fussing over me, her one-legged daughter. "Where, Mama?" I mumbled when I became lucid. "Recovering from surgery," she sniffled. "She'll never walk again." "And Sullivan?" She shook her head. "Only 7 people survived." I felt as if something was crushing my heart, and my body shook in my mother's embrace. "We still have Mama. We have both of you," she cried. "Praise God." The end.
We hope that you enjoyed this episode. Please take a moment to follow CocoaPod and turn on your notifications so that you don't miss new stories when they drop. One last thing. Caribbean stories and Caribbean writers need our help. Show your support by sharing and downloading this podcast as far and as widely as you can. Buy their books, support independent bookshops, and request Caribbean titles from your local libraries. Remember that a rising tide lifts all ships. Give thanks. For more Caribbean storytelling goodness, follow CocoaPod and BCLF Always Lit on all major podcast platforms.